From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, 40 years ago, Elvis Presley died. We'll have a tribute. Here's what's happening. Two radio stations on the Pacific island of Guam are in hot water tonight after accidentally broadcasting a missile warning, sparking fears of a North Korean nuke attack. The civil danger warning message was mistakenly broadcast because of human error just after midnight. Now, North Korea has stated it will not launch against Guam unless provoked by us. And North Korean tyrant Kim Jong-un might be, by the way, he is suffering from what they call roid age. That's right. He may have some kind of gout. It is on steroids. That's the widespread speculation in the medical community that he's got gout, known as the disease of the Epicureans and kings because it is caused by a rich diet. Gout is a buildup of uric acid in joints, particularly in the feet, causes acute pain. And they think he may be on steroids. Who knows? Three children and one adult were hurt when a massive tree fell on top of them in New York Central Park. They all have non-life-threatening injuries. The devastated family of a West Australian fitness model have warned about the dangers of protein supplements after they contributed to the young mother's death. Megan Hefford, a 25-year-old mother of two, found unconscious in her apartment and was pronounced dead days later. Here's pharmacist Ben Fuchs with us. Ben, can this kind of supplement really hurt people, these protein shakes?
No, absolutely not. The condition that this gal had is extremely, extremely rare. It does occur in a continuum. There's mild versions of it. She probably had a mild version of it. What she did wrong was she took a lot of protein supplements without using micronutrients. You always have to balance out your macronutrients, that is your protein, your fats and your sugars, with your vitamins and your minerals. She wasn't doing that. Protein supplements by itself aren't a problem.
Okay. Well, that's good news for a lot of people who use protein supplements. Indeed. Thanks, Ben. Sales at U.S. retailers surged in July to the highest level of 2017, aided by strong demand for new autos and Amazon's Prime Day shopping specials. Not bad news at all. Fake news is a type of yellow journalism or propaganda that consists of deliberate misinformation or hoaxes spread via traditional print and broadcast news media or online social media. And it seems to be running rampant lately. Lauren Weinstein, an expert on the internet with us. Lauren, tell me, what is going on?
Well, the first thing we have to do is carefully define fake news, because it's being used in two different ways right now. There's the way you just described, which is describing statements that are demonstrably false. So someone will say, we never got to the moon, when there's a laser reflector there you can shine a laser at and prove we went to the moon. Then there's the way some people use fake news now, which is really to say not newsworthy, which is completely different. It's fake news, you shouldn't even be talking about it. It doesn't mean it didn't happen, it just means someone says it's not important. So we're talking about the kind where it's false information. What has happened now is there has been the problem of fake news, false information, all through history, all through publishing. But the rise of the internet made a big difference, because instead of just having to go out and buy a newspaper that was a specialty paper that appealed only to people with certain inclinations, on the internet now this can all be done on an automated basis, and it largely is. The systems understand what kinds of news stories you want to see, what kinds of things you believe, and they keep showing you more like that. What that means is that when fake stories get into these, and we call them filter bubbles, it's very hard for people to even realize that they're kind of living in this sealed ecosystem and aren't seeing information from other sources that would reveal that some of those stories aren't true. It's also important to remember that this is all about the money to a very large degree. If you talk to the very large system operators who really started the fake news boom going, they did testing. They tried to figure out what kind of stories would get the most clicks,
right,
and that would get them the most revenue on the ad networks. So it's not just politics, it's money too. You mix those two things together, you tend to always have a mess.
And we're going to have more and more of this, Lauren, I'm afraid. Up next, somebody who doesn't deal with fake news, political consultant Dick Morris, back on Coast to Coast. His latest work, Rogue Spooks, the intelligence war on Donald Trump? Wait till you hear this story next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Dory with you. Now, you know what's going on around this planet right now and what's happening here at home as well. This is probably one of the most unbelievable stories I have seen in really all my life. This presidential campaign through the presidential election for the first 8 months that Donald Trump has been in office truly has been unbelievably chaotic. Well, with us tonight for the first couple hours, political consultant Dick Morris. He, of course, has become well known for his insightful, hard-hitting commentary. He has handled the winning campaigns of more than 30 senators and governors. That number probably has gone up. He has piloted successful campaigns of the president or prime minister of Mexico, Colombia, Argentina, Uruguay, Kenya, Spain, and other international campaigns as well. Noted best-selling author, wrote a book with Eileen McCann called Rogue Spooks. And Dick, welcome back. I had you last on the election night. Boy, I didn't expect that, but here we are. Welcome back, well, Dick.
I was one of the only guys that predicted Trump would win.
That's right.
In fact, Eileen and I wrote a book called Armageddon, How Trump Can Beat Hillary. And people said, you know, since you wrote it, I think it'll be a bestseller, but I don't know if it'll be fiction or nonfiction.
I got to tell you, Dick, what is happening? It is as if this administration, this president, is just under fire. They don't leave him alone. What's happening?
There is a coup d'etat going on, as surely as if tanks were rolling down Pennsylvania Avenue. It's like you're living in a South American country. And it's a coup that aims to remove Trump from office. But more importantly, it aims to assert the dominance of the deep state, the dominance of the permanent government, the bureaucratic, intelligence, economic establishment that feels it runs the country and feels it should and feels that elected officials are kind of a nuisance you tolerate who change every 4 years. This began when Obama took office 9 years ago, and he realized that there is such a thing as this deep state, a consensus that in economic terms dominates the Federal Reserve Board, the Treasury, and the IMF, and in national security terms, dominates the intel agencies, the Defense Department, State Department, National Security Council, and the White House. And they have their opinions. They have their views, their worldview, their feeling as to what ought to happen, and they regard elected officials as sort of a nuisance that surfaces and changes every couple of years. And Obama decided that they would be deeply anti him. They would, in many cases, be suspicious of a black, and in any case, way to the right of where he was. So he set out to change it. And he took the two agencies that are the core of the right wing, used to be the core of the right wing in the United States, the FBI that went after leftist dissidents and communists and so on, and the CIA that went after foreign regimes that were too far left and not to our liking. And he put in charge of the CIA John Brennan, who is such a radical that Brennan voted communist in the election of 1980 for president. He said, I voted for the Communist Party, and because Carter wasn't liberal enough for me. And in the Justice Department, Eric Holder, who basically is a very strong, racially motivated black elected official. And in the FBI, James Comey, who is an equally committed and dedicated deep state person. And what they did was that they cleaned house. Everybody who had been involved in Iraq interrogations or in Abu Ghraib or in Guantanamo was gone. And in the FBI, they cleaned the ranks and replaced them all with ultra-left liberals. To get into those agencies, you had to be referred by, you know, some leftist group like the Sierra Club or ACLU. And they completely changed those agencies, which Obama felt he had to do to survive. He expected Hillary to win. and it would be no problem. There would be no problem in the transition.
Mm-hmm.
But when it looked like Trump would get the nomination, Obama and Hillary got various Hillary donors to put up $160,000 to develop dirt on Trump. And Hillary started to use the normal stuff, divorces and, you know, his bankruptcies and all that, and
right.
It didn't work. So they decided the key thing you got to do is to portray this him as colluding with Vladimir Putin to fix the election, and to take statements that Trump had made that basically indicated that he didn't hate Putin and that he wanted to get along with him, and make it seem as if they were colluding together. And they had a former British spy named Christopher Steele develop a dossier on Trump to prove this collusion. And the dossier was an absolute piece of nonsense.
This was a total fraud, wasn't it?
Total fraud, total fabrication. For example, it said that Trump designated his personal lawyer, Mike Cohn, to go to Prague to meet over several weeks with various Russian intel officers to plan this collusion. And Cohn's passport showed he'd never been in Prague. He'd never been in the Czech Republic. He was stateside during the entire campaign. And they identified another guy who they said, this is the guy who hacked the Democratic computer. It turns out that the poor son of a gun was serving a 20-year sentence for pedophilia in a penal colony in Siberia without access to a phone or a computer. Couldn't possibly have done it. They chose his name because nobody could reach him to verify it. And then they made up that stupid story about the prostitutes in the hotel room in Moscow where Trump allegedly watched them peeing on a bed. And this stuff was so far-fetched that nobody would publish it. Nobody, not a single organ in the U.S. or blog or site would publish it. So they were desperate to get this out. And they tried to get it out by Election Day, and they couldn't. Then 2 weeks after Election Day, the guys who wrote this dossier, Christopher Steele, basically, was at a conference in Nova Scotia with John McCain. And they went over to McCain and said, we have this dossier, and he said, I've heard about it. And they said, we need to get this published. And McCain agreed to give it to Comey. Now, Comey, the head of the FBI, already knew about it because he had seen a partial copy a month before.
Okay.
And said, we got to verify this stuff. And offered $50,000 from the FBI to Steele if he would verify it. And Steele tried and couldn't. So Comey knew that this was a fraud. But Comey said, well, now I've gotten this from a United States senator, and it's my duty to pass it to the president and the leaders of Congress.
Oh, jeez.
And 2 weeks before Obama left office, he did just that. And it immediately leaked into the media. But even so, with all these crazy stories in the media, it turned out the people didn't believe it because it was so far-fetched. So at that point, Brennan and Holder and Comey got together their guys, the people they had planted in the bureaucracy, and said, you can't leave. You've got to stay on into the Trump presidency. I'm going to transfer 2,000 of you from appointed jobs to civil service jobs so you can't be removed by Trump. And I want you to leak like hell and destabilize this regime and substantiate the charge of collusion with Russia, even if it isn't true. And with the FBI, for example, leaked 2 weeks after Trump took office, and the New York Times published it as their lead article, that the FBI had overheard Trump's people talking to the Russian intel officers to plan this collusion. Total fiction. Never happened.
And ironically, Dick, the Comey release of Hillary Clinton and her emails prior to the election, I think seriously hurt her as well. This whole campaign was up in the air, wasn't it?
Yes, I think he did. I think he did hurt her. But I don't think anybody took seriously that Trump could win until he did. And therefore, this whole effort to take Trump down and to kick him out really metastasized after Election Day, not before.
Why does there seem to be such animosity towards him? I mean, I got to tell you, I don't like some of his tweets, And some of the things he says off the cuff are kind of foolish. The situation with the Charlottesville tragedy, I think he could have been a little stronger in his remarks. Be that as it may, why do they seem to be trying to destroy the guy? I mean, is he that evil to them, to the deep state?
Yeah, he is. It's not ideology. I mean, they disagree with him on almost everything, but that's not important. What's important is that these folks feel they run the country. They feel that they are in charge.
Yeah, okay.
And Trump, when he ran, called it a swamp, said he was going to drain it, and made attacking them his major priority. And then he committed the ultimate offense after he took office. He appointed Mike Flynn the director of national intelligence. And Flynn had a reputation for being an absolute bull in a china shop because he hated the intelligence community. He thought it was duplicative, wasteful, ineffective, didn't serve the country well. And everywhere he went, there was a trail of bodies behind him of people he had fired. And the intel establishment was desperate to keep control of intelligence and keep Flynn out of office. And they said, if Trump is going to appoint guys like Flynn, we have to take him down. I don't know if you saw an interview that Philip Mudd, the deputy director of the FBI under Mueller, gave to CNN, where he said, if you're not going to protect us and you're going to advocate for Vladimir Putin when our guys are being sent home in body bags, and you're going to disrespect government officials who've worked for 20 or 30 years serving this country, we're not going to protect you. And then he said, the government's going to kill this guy. And that is their attitude. I don't know what happened at the Kennedy assassination, but there is a major theory that the establishment, the deep state, felt threatened by Kennedy because he was deciding to wind down the Cold War, and they wanted to fight the Cold War, and in many cases their livings depended on it, and that presaged the assassination. When I know that in 1976, when Jimmy Carter was elected, he ran against the CIA, deploring their interrogations and their role in the coup d'etats in South America, in Chile in particular, where they got the president killed and the elected president. And Carter appointed Ted Sorensen to become head of the CIA, a real liberal, a human rights guy, a really classy guy, and he's the one that wrote all of Kennedy's speeches. And Sorensen didn't get confirmed because, it emerged that he had two messy divorces, it came out that he was a conscientious objector as a kid, and all kinds of stuff that the deep state dug up on him to sabotage that nomination. And they do not take lightly impinging on their turf. I'll tell you a personal story. When I was working for Clinton...
Right. And you were one of his top advisors.
I was his top advisor.
Okay.
I mean, political advisor, yeah. And he and I were talking about foreign policy stuff. And we discussed the possibility of naming certain nations as rogue nations. Funny, because we used the word rogue back then.
Yeah.
And North Korea, you know, Cuba.
Iran.
Libya, all that. Iran. And... And I said, I think that's a great idea. And he had a speech coming up for Memorial Day. So I drafted a speech that did that, and I sent it to the president, and he made some changes and liked it and was all set to give it. And he had to clear it with the National Security Council. So he sent it to them. And this guy comes down. I swear, I thought he was going to beat me up. He said, you do not get into this. This is the job of the National Security Council. I said, I work for the president. He wanted me to do this. I don't care what he wanted. We are in charge of foreign policy, and you do this through us. And if you push things like this, you're going to read that a political hack is controlling foreign policy in the United States, and you're going to be discredited in every newspaper organ in the country. So I went to Clinton, and I said, what the hell do I do? And he said, back down. We'll do it another way.
Huh.
Now, let me go back to my narrative, though, because it's important.
Okay. And we're coming up on a break, Dick, so let's wait. Okay. We'll come back to your narrative in just a moment. Dick Morris with us. The name of his latest work with Eileen McCann is Rogue Spooks. It's about what's been going on, folks, which is truly unbelievable. I don't know how much longer we can take this because they just won't let go. We're going to come back in a moment with Dick Morris as we talk more about his latest work, Rogue Spooks. It's inside story. It's information you're not going to hear anyplace else. And he's next with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. George Norrie with you. Rogue Spooks, Dick Morris's latest book. His website, by the way, is his name, and it's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Dick, let's get right back into this and your analysis of what's happening to Donald Trump.
Well, where we left off in this narrative, and it really is a saga, they had released this dossier that was full of holes. It said stuff that nobody could believe, and it was all over the media. And then Comey and Brennan, the former CIA director, got the guys they had seeded into the establishment, into the intelligence community. They'd hired them, they'd cultivated them, and they moved them into civil service jobs before he left office so they couldn't be replaced. And these guys leaked like crazy, usually disinformation, stuff designed to prove that Trump was colluding. Now, at this point, they then moved against the two people who are most important in defending Donald Trump. One was Mike Flynn, who would have taken over the intelligence establishment and really cleaned house. And the other was Jeff Sessions, where they got Sessions to recuse himself after that phony garbage about had he ever spoken to Russians.
Right.
And now they're trying to do the same thing with Steve Bannon, who's sort of the third leg of the stool protecting Trump. And then at that time, Trump began a series of meetings with Comey. And Comey came in and Trump said, in effect, listen, we have huge problems here. We have to prevent these lone wolf terrorists from operating. We've got to be effective against Al-Qaeda domestically. We have drugs. We have opioids. What are you doing to deal with that? And Comey, in effect, said, well, I'm very busy researching the issue of whether you collaborated with Putin. And Trump basically went ballistic and said, I did not collaborate with him. That's a load of garbage. And I want you to get back to the job of the country, what I want you to do. And Comey then announced and interpreted that as an obstruction of justice. And I believe the entire process was baiting Donald Trump to say that, to move him in that direction. Trump fired Comey. Comey published his memo, and it led to a special prosecutor. And the guy they selected, Robert Mueller, was Comey's best friend. They both went after Martha Stewart together, for example. There were co-prosecutors there. And Stewart and Comey was the deputy attorney general, while Mueller was the FBI director. Then they basically switched jobs. And they were very close, best friends. And Mueller picked up where Comey left off. He hires a staff packed with liberals. Seven of his 17 staffers were donors to the Democratic Party. One of them was Hillary Clinton's lawyer, the lawyer for the Clinton Foundation, Janet Rhee. One of the guys he hired is a guy named Weissman, who was almost disbarred for his tactics in the Enron prosecution when he worked at Justice. In fact, the conviction was thrown out by the appellate court because of prosecutorial misconduct by him being too aggressive. And he hires these attack dogs to go after Trump. And he's long since given up the idea of proving collusion. But what he's on now is to prove that Trump obstructed justice.
Which is an impeachable offense, isn't it?
Exactly. Which is to say he ran the country. You know, he told the government what to do. And that is what they're going after now. And I think they have a very good chance of succeeding.
Oh,
now,
boy.
I think there's only one way we can turn this around and protect our system of government. And that is all of the weakness of the Mueller-Comey strategy is that it's all based on leaks, much of which are illegal. For example, George, I'm sure you've heard about how they entered Manafort's house with a SWAT team.
Right. They stormed the place.
Yeah. Well, Manafort didn't have a press conference to announce that, and no reporters were there. This was all a leak out of Mueller's office.
That's right. It happened a month ago, didn't it?
No. Yeah, July.
Yeah.
And it's illegal to leak that. You're not allowed to do that. It's a disbarrable offense. And each day you get another leak coming out of Mueller's office, including serious national security leaks, that things like the text of Trump's phone call with the president of Mexico. And I believe that what Trump needs to do is to get Sessions to appoint a special prosecutor to prosecute the special prosecutor, to go through each of these leaks, find its source, find who the leakers are, use lie detectors, all of that stuff, and go after the prosecutor based on his tactics in leaking. And while you're at it, put some offense on the board by going after Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation and reopening the email investigation and going after Loretta Lynch for that tarmac meeting with President Clinton and for her telling Comey to downplay the investigation during the campaign.
When you worked with President Bill Clinton, and of course you got to know Hillary as well, what did you think of her at the time when she was just the First Lady?
Well, to me, she was never just the First Lady. She was his manager. She was his the person who ran his career. I never imagined back then that she would actually run for office herself. But she was the one who made the trains run on time. And she and I worked very closely together. And we liked each other. She liked that I do some hard-hitting politics and often with negatives. I liked the fact that when I wanted to get something done, she made it happen. Bill has no discipline. He has no ability to focus on one or two things. He's so easily distracted, whereas Hillary can't be distracted. She's like a locomotive. And I appreciated that. I loved working for her. But in the course of it, I saw how crazy she was, how paranoid and how secretive and tying herself up in knots. And I realized that she'd be a terrible president, which led to our divorce.
Yeah, a tragic divorce. Now, in terms of President Trump now at this point, give me your report card on him. His approval rating is at an all-time low. It spiked for a little bit during the Korean situation. It's gone back down again. Because of, I think, this weekend episode, this tragedy in Virginia. But give me your report card on him. I mean, is he as bad as the media portrays him to be?
Oh, no. I have a list of his accomplishments that is like 10 pages long. In my book, I list list dozens of them.
Right. Right.
And what he's done is basically deregulate much of the American economy. And he's repealed all kinds of regulations over the internet, over climate change, over power plants, over police conduct, over a lot of stuff. And the result has been a liberation of entrepreneurial energy in the United States. If a businessman is about to set up a small business, he knows that he'll have a friend in the White House who's clearing away regulations rather than imposing them. His goal was to wipe out two regs for each one he created. In fact, he's wiped out 16 for each one he created. And while that hasn't involved legislative action, although some of it has, there's a statute where Congress can repeal legislation, and it's done that frequently this year, never before. He's been very successful, and the economy is liberated. There's a drive and an energy there. You know, there are 6.3 million job vacancies in the United States right now.
That's right.
And
can't fill them.
What?
Can't fill them. Yeah.
I know, exactly. In fact, one of the things I'm worried about in the long term, George, is whether Obama has taught America not to work and increased entitlements to a point where they don't have to. And I know so many friends who've stopped working. They're in their 60s and whatever.
And they're able to live on the entitlements, I guess.
Yeah, and their savings, but mainly entitlements. So I think he's done very well in that regard. In foreign policy, I think that he pulled off two master strokes. The media will never give him credit for it, but I've been on the inside, and I know how great those were. One, the smaller one, was when Assad of Syria was going to poison gas his people. Trump said, literally, fire, the whole earth is going to descend on you if you do that. And Assad backed off, and the raids were canceled. And just last week, when North Korea was threatening Guam, he basically said, I'll turn you into a parking lot. And while any American president would have stood up and said, we will retaliate massively if you do this, only Donald Trump would say it in a way that Kim Jong-un couldn't misunderstand.
Right.
Where he talked his language, literally. By the way, I'm tickled to death that this guy has gout. You get gout from
you heard that story.
His country is starving to death, and he's got gout. That's terrific. And I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. Now, on Obamacare, it's very unfortunate that he couldn't get that passed. And he couldn't get it passed because John McCain, who is one of the plotters in this coup, basically told him to go fly a kite. Now, McCain has reason to dislike Trump because of Trump's outrageous comments disparaging his military record.
Right.
But still, when he voted on Obamacare, he went thumbs down. What he should have done is raised another finger to indicate what he was really doing.
Yeah, I was talking to a friend of mine, Dick, who just supports everything that Donald Trump does. And I said, look, I'm a guy in the media. I've been in the media since I was 19 years old. If I were one of his aides, I'd just tell him, you got to stop this. You got to slow down here. You can't just keep talking off the cuff. And his remark was to me, my buddy said, but then that's not Donald Trump.
Yeah. We're so used to soundbite politicians who are programmed that he's a refreshing change. And that's why he could have beaten Hillary and nobody else could have, because he represented such a refreshing authenticity. And he's not about to lose that. My only concern right now, other than his being thrown the hell out, is that he's losing all of his allies. Instead of Flynn.
Yeah, all these corporate guys have left him today on those committees. And
he's got McMaster there as his foreign policy guy, and he's firing everybody who is loyal to Trump. There's a guy named Higgins who wrote a memo saying that McMaster was not following Trump's policies, and he got fired.
Jeez.
Like it was the Obama White House.
Is Bannon next?
Well, I'm afraid he might be, and Bannon is sort of the spiritual center of the Trump presidency. He took Donald's instincts and translated them into a coherent policy. And I think that I told Steve himself that, you remember the guy, I was Burundi Bundi, who was Muhammad Ali's chief guy?
Yeah.
The one who said, float like a butterfly.
That's right,
like a bee.
Sting like a bee.
Well, that's what Bannon is to Trump. You know, the guy who sort of keeps the grail and reminds Donald Trump of who he is.
Well, I have never seen in all my experience with presidential elections and administrations more apparent chaos internally. Now, is that just my impression, Dick,
yeah,
or is it really happening?
First of all, it always goes on. I can't tell you how many times Stephanopoulos tried to have me fired. It's a normal concomitant. Usually it's out of view. But a lot of this is the leaking. A lot of this is to deliberately create the image of a totally dysfunctional administration, which is not true, particularly given what he's accomplished. George, do you ever watch Homeland, the TV show?
Yes, once in a while I do.
Okay, well, there's an episode of Homeland, which I quote in this book. It's by Saul Berenson, who is the alleged, in the act plays the CIA director. And he turns to the president-elect, and he says, you're missing it right now. It's happening in front of your faces. We have a disinformation campaign designed to discredit the president-elect. And as of now, they have boots on the ground, like the protesters I had to wade through to get here. Does that seem familiar to any of you?
It sure does.
It sure does to me. It's what we did in Nicaragua, Chile, Congo, a dozen other places, all the way back to Iran in the 50s. And it does not end well for the elected regime. You're fighting for your lives here. Don't you get that? You can't afford to stay silent.
In your opinion, with your experience, your years of experience, and you've got your thumb on the pulse, are they going to impeach him?
Well, that depends on what happens in the elections of 2018. If the Republicans are able to keep control of the House and the Senate, but more the House, I think that they can stave it off. But I think that that depends again on his popularity, and that again depends on the media and the leaking.
Right.
I'll tell you this. I believe that for two reasons, the polling way understates Trump's effectiveness and job rating, as it predicted his defeat. All of them did. And it just doesn't get it right.
Yeah, I can't believe, Dick, that his supporters, those people who voted him in as president, would have run away from him as quickly as these polls say they have.
They have not. You're looking at a statistical aberration here. There are seven polls that track the presidency. Only one of them, Rasmussen, gets it right. Rasmussen only polls likely voters. Everybody else polls either adults or registered voters, not likely voters. Gallup, for example, today was out that he's the lowest he's ever been, and they just survey adults. Well, you take a sample of 1,000 adults, 200 of them aren't citizens and aren't registered, and another 100 aren't registered. Another 200 or 300 are registered, but they never vote. And somewhere you have 500 or 400 in that 1,000 who are actually voters, but their opinions are so diluted by everybody else. And most of the other groups are leftist because they tend to be more poorer and more downscale. The actual number is that Trump has an approval that's running between a low of 42, 41, and a high of 45 and 46. And he got 47% of the vote. So, you know, he's still 48. I think he's doing all right. And I think that you have to realize that the media so underestimates him, so down-talks him, that it's easy to miss his real political strength.
If you were advising him, Dick, in terms of his presentation and his actions, what would you be saying to him?
Well, the first big thing I tell him is appoint your own special prosecutor. Get some offense on the board against this guy Mueller. I told President Clinton that when Ken Starr was chasing him around, there was in effect a presidential race of Clinton against Starr.
Yeah.
And that Starr was really running for president against him. That was never Ken's intention, but it's what it was. And I told him he needs offense. And that's what Trump needs. He needs to go after these leaks. He needs to take the leakers and put them under oath, give them lie detector tests, call the reporters and say, you received classified information on thus and such a date from an anonymous source. We are going to prosecute you for being in possession of classified information, like Petraeus was. That's illegal. And we will put you in jail, not on a contempt order, but on a violation of the Espionage Act for holding classified information in your possession, which is a felony. Unless you give us the name of the reporter.
Gosh, you know a reporter's not going to give up his sources, Dick. They'll fight it.
Yeah, facing a 5-year jail term, they will.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting twist. Now, some people might say, though, that they are just destroying the American way if he does something like that.
Well, they're destroying the American way, and by making it impossible for the president to govern, by releasing every possible form of classified information. And I believe you have to fight fire with fire. And I believe the only way to fight a forest fire is to light a backfire that burns up the fuel before it can get to it. And that's what I think he needs to do.
Dick, we got a final hour coming up with you in just a moment. We're going to take some phone calls, continue chatting on some other issues I want to talk with you about, including, you know, bitcoins and cashless societies and so much more. And calls next with Dick Morris, author of Rogue Spooks, right here on Coast to Coast AM.